something great, or just somewhere in the ballpark. Won't you shake? Won't you shake? Won't you shake?
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Kate Prusser. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing, and joining me, as always, is my pal John. John, how are you?
I'm doing well, Kate. How about yourself?
I am good. I am a little hoarse, you can hear, because the UW men's basketball team, I wasn't at the game or anything, but I was...
You were within a five-mile radius, and that was enough.
I was at a bar, and because I had been out visiting my grandfather and realized game was about to start, so, rushed over to this bar, watched with a bunch of, random people. We were hugging each other. We were high-fiving. That was an unbelievable game. But I shouldn't go on about UW too much, because joining us is the pride of Oregon State, Andrew Moore. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
I don't mean, John and I are both Husky fans, so I do not mean to rub the success of the UW's men's basketball team.
No, that was a big win. I saw, Mariners were tweeting about it. Saw Bishop was all over it.
Bishop.
My Twitter was blowing up about him, and that was cool. I remember back when I was younger, in middle school. Oh man, they had some tough teams. So looks like they're starting to get back to those times. And the talent and the basketball talent around Seattle they've produced in the NBA is unbelievable. It's pretty cool. So
it's just a fountain of 5'8" and shorter guards that are exceptional. I don't know how exactly, but that's the niche that we've really got locked down.
They're killing it though. They're killing it.
Yeah, you don't have to be tall to succeed. You'd think we'd grow them taller out here though. With all these wide open spaces. But it's pretty, I'm sure maybe you're interested in this as somebody who deals with coaches or has experienced some different coaches in your life. Mike Hopkins just seems to have gotten this incredible buy-in out from the team, and he's asked them to do, I listened to this podcast, or I guess it was it was 710, the radio show, where they had him on, and he was talking about how he was making them do this uphill run where they were just puking over the place because they were not. And then, he brought them back a month later and they ran up the hill with ease and la, 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 great story. But, that's a tough investment when you're I'm going to push you to the point where you are physically uncomfortable, your body is physically rebelling and you're going to thank me for it.
100%, especially from both sides where you have the coach with players that he hasn't necessarily recruited or gone after, so you don't know how he feels, and the players are playing for a guy who they weren't probably recruited by. Mm-hmm. So kind of getting that buy-in, that early success. Mm-hmm. Oregon State saw that with both their men's and women's programs, with new coaches coming in and seeing immediate success right away, and it's always impressive, and it's just about sustaining it and building off it. But, they've had a heck of a year.
Have you ever had a coaching staff or a coach who was that sort of incredibly hard-nosed, old-school kind of guy, some sort of intentionally go-until-you-puke kind of workout?
Or, related question, who really stands out as a coach that you got a lot from, who really pushed you to that, who you feel you made the most significant steps forward under?
Yeah, I think Coach Casey is the obvious answer here, but going back to middle elementary school basketball, actually, it was we had a coach who he played some college hoops, and we would play in big tournaments in Portland and Seattle, and he would run us as far as we could, and he would always say, "We're never going to be the most talented team in the tournaments, but we'll be in the best shape," and he would be yelling and screaming the whole time, and if you miss your free throws, you're running, so you're even more tired, but I think basketball is just kind of, how a lot of people go about it. And, everyone has their own way of going about it. But, Coach Casey kind of has that old school mentality where he's not afraid to get after you a little bit and, push at you and see how you respond. And, it's the guys who kind of fight back and don't adjust to it that have a tougher time. But when you see guys start coming around and buying in, then that's when you really see strides on and off the field as people. There's been a lot of good examples of that I've seen personally.
And that's a little similar to what is going on in the Mariners organization right now, mm-hmm. right? We've had a regime shift, and I know you were here just for the tail end of the outgoing, and then most of your experiences have been with the new one. But, I mean, as somebody who kind of has straddled both, what's that transition been like? Have you seen any of that of, you know, people being asked to do new things? And change is always hard, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and especially such a abrupt change like that was. But, mm-hmm. As soon as DePoto and McKay and that whole the new regime came in from day one, they got a hold of me and said that they had heard I had problems with driveline in my first year with coaches kind of fighting me on it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then, the first thing they said was that won't be an issue at all, that they're, you know, really open to it and, you know, we'll be all on board. And if there's any problems to, you know, make sure to get a hold of them and they'll figure it out. But, especially with the method of training I like to go about, they've been very encouraging and, they've suggested it to other players. Altavilla and Pagan are two that come to mind right away that have seen big benefits from driveline and that style of training. Mm-hmm. So it's been huge for their careers. And, I hope over the long term, it'll keep them healthy and keep them improving on the field.
And it is one of those things where when one guy is doing it and the results are there, then you get buy-in from everybody else who's like, well, like we were talking to Lindsey Coggle a couple of weeks ago on the pod, and he mentioned that he's seen the driveline stuff and he's like, well, I want to get into more pitcher health and more velocity is something I want a piece of. So, right.
Yeah, exactly. And especially with the, he was talking about in Little Rock where we had it was such a close environment where there was only this one tiny room that we could do it. So there was seven or eight of us in there. And we'd have to fight over room and whatnot. So it made it kind of fun. But no, I mean, some of the conversations that, Lindsey and I had, or Brett Ash or Tyler Herb or Ryan Horseman, I mean, all these guys we had there was pretty cool. And, they've all had different experiences with weighted balls and have different programs and philosophies, but, a lot of growth can come from those conversations and, talking through the differences. And obviously Tacoma and Seattle, there was multiple guys up there that were dude or interested in it. And, seems like every day we'd have hour long debates or talks in the clubhouse, just kind of going over the philosophy and, methodology of it. But it was a very interesting topic that's kind of followed me everywhere I've gone.
Well, it really shifts things into like a laboratory environment, right? Where everybody is trying, we're instead of just listening to messages from on high and then repeating them, it's like you're all kind of scientists, like trying your own thing and then reporting back to everybody else and taking ideas from each other, almost like an apprenticeship or workshop.
Yeah, exactly. Model. And especially with pitching where, you can have the same program as someone, but ultimately everyone's body and needs are different where, for instance, this off season I'm training with Dan Straley here in Eugene every day. And, we're similar pitchers, but we both have different stuff we're working on. So some days he'll, do an extra set of rockers or walking windups, and I'll do an extra set of reverse throws or pivot picks or something like that. It's just knowing what your body needs and what you're looking to improve. And so, you can kind of take the same program. And I think like Lindsey was talking about, he's kind of made his own out of the, basic driveline program. He's kind of taken it and made some adjustments, which is awesome. And that's, knowing what you have to do to get better and going out and, doing something about it. So it's been awesome to see his development.
How long have you been involved with driveline? So, because obviously that predated you coming to the Mariners organization, and you were a big part of introducing it to guys like Lindsey and Dan, and Dan I think had a college relationship with them as well, right?
He did.
How did that start?
It was my freshman year at Oregon State in 2013. We'd had a bunch of conversations in the bullpens or on the buses about weighted balls, and that was kind of right when it was starting to get some momentum. And our pitching coach, Nate Yeske, said that he'd been doing years and years of research on it, but didn't want to, didn't want to give the go ahead until he really trusted that it was something that benefited us and that there was enough science behind it. So my sophomore year, Kyle Bodie came and drove down to Corvallis and gave us the pitch. And there was, I think, four of us pitchers, Coach Casey, Coach Yeski, and then our athletic trainer, and then our performance coach. And Kyle was talking all those science terms so we could understand like five words he said the entire time. But yeah, we slowly started to implement it that year, really having no idea how to go about it. And we always laugh about the first few days we were doing it. Just the drills were so bad, and we had no idea what we were doing, just throwing these, 2-pound balls behind our heads, and they were flying everywhere. But, we slowly started to get the hang of it and seeing guys who, usually would throw and then have to take a day or two off and ice and would be on the shelf. They slowly started seeing quicker recovery, and I saw some velocity where it wouldn't dip down to like 86, 87 mile average. It'd stay a little bit higher up. We had some guys see some, ceiling gains where they'd be up to 95, 96, where before they were only 91, 92. So, everyone just started seeing benefits, and we all bought in. So then my junior year, we were pretty much all in, and every day we were going about it and had a nice system going. And then, it's definitely a lot more challenging in pro ball, given that you're at the field every single day, you're throwing every fifth day, you don't quite have the same amount of recovery time between starts, but that's been part of the fun, is trying to, adjust that program based on how your body's feeling, when your next start is, how you were feeling last start. So it's kind of it's never a perfect product, but it's definitely a nice tool. I look at it just as lifting, where you have to do it to maintain strength and, build what you already have. So it's kind of paired well with that, both in season and off season.
Obviously the results have borne out for you, pretty well so far. But I guess we've had some good back and forth of a few different people that we've talked to, but especially that work in college led to you getting taken in the second round by the Mariners back in 2015, which had to be a fairly exciting moment. But could you take us through your draft day experience there?
Yeah, I'll take you back even farther, but
absolutely.
Yeah, going into the draft, obviously most people, hire a advisor. I don't think I can say agent. Hire an advisor, and, go about that. But we just had no idea, and I was honestly fine if I went back for senior year and got to play another one. But we decided not to hire one, and so my mom actually served as my advisor, and. She was taking, a dozen calls a day or so, and talking to, scouting directors and assistant GMs and whoever else it was. And, really had no idea what was going on, but, it was in the middle of our season, and I was trying to prepare for finals. So, trying to take 10 calls and have in-depth conversations while you're trying to study for, a final coming up the next day is pretty tough. So she was like, all right, I've had it. Like, give him my number and I'll talk to him. So, so she took on that.
Good honor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. She absolutely, she killed it, and, had no idea what to expect going into the first day of the draft. Like, some people had expressed interest that early, but no one really shows their hand before the draft. So, we kind of didn't really know what to expect and had a party planned for the next day. Didn't really invite anyone over, and, just saw the draft going, and I was getting super nervous and was actually about to leave and go on a walk or something, and then the Mariners called and gave us the offer, and we accepted, and then it was pretty cool seeing Ken Griffey Jr. be the one to call my name and walking up on stage. And that was definitely a night I'll always remember. But so my mom was the one who kind of led that whole routine, I guess.
Well, she's not exactly like just your stereotypical mom, right?
Oh, yeah.
She knows.
Yep.
she Estelle knows her stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think I gave out on the Reddit AMA that growing up, anytime I'd miss free throws or walk people, she would be the first one to give me a nice scolding and a nice earful for that. But, no, yeah, she grew up around the game, and her dad played professionally, and that's kind of where my love for the game came from. And, yeah, so she's had a huge influence on my career. And, yeah, definitely wouldn't be here without all the hard work and commitment she's had.
So take us through, we talked a little bit about the training. Take us through like what your off season looks like, what happened after, you know, the regular season ended, what's your off season looked like so far? What are you working on?
It was nice having, obviously was up all in September, and that was, you know, pretty tough that extra month. I mean, it's physically very demanding where, you know, you've never put your body through that long of a season, starting from spring training and then going all the way through beginning of October. So I took about a month off and just played as many video games as I could, watched as much of the playoffs, and, you know, took the dog for a bunch of walks. I know we're going to get into that later. But, yeah, just tried to enjoy life away from the game for a little bit and kind of hit the reset button. And then, about mid-November, started lifting again here in Eugene with Straley. And then a little bit after that, slowly started doing the driveline program. But, yeah, I'd say trying to work on just overall getting stronger. That's something I've always – I was kind of late to lifting where I didn't touch a single weight until I got to Oregon State. So I'm still trying to catch up on the strength category with a lot of people. But made some good strides there. There's a few mechanical things I'm trying to smooth out that I was fighting last year. And then, yeah, there's a few pitch development things we're kind of toying with right now that I've been talking to Stott and Brower about. So we're, you know, in the works on that. And, yeah, we have a good setup with some with Oregon State. Obviously, they have some good technology, a bunch of camera work that we can do to, you know, see exactly what pitches are doing and how the mechanics are looking. They have machines like Rapsodo and TrackMan to see exactly what the pitches coming out are, the actions like. So kind of pairing all that's definitely helped out and taking the guesswork out of all the stuff we're doing.
So there are a few things that I want to ask you about, and I do want to ask you about video games.
And we'll get
of course we want to ask about Whippy, but I do want to ask you about the pitch development stuff, because you know, what we do is so much, you know, it's so far removed from what, you know, from being in the clubhouse daily and the work that you guys do. So, you know, our analysis is often sort of big picture, but it's always, you know, fascinating to look at pitch development and try and pair, you know, and so much of the work that's being done now that we hear about is, you know, people doing analysis of pitch pairing and pitch tunneling and all these different things. And so, are you able to give away just a little bit of like what pitches you guys, you know, you were toying with or what you've been working on specifically? I would imagine working on the slider and maybe a cutter, you know, something like that. But is that something you're comfortable talking about a little bit?
Yeah, actually, a knuckleball is in the works, but nothing too drastic. I mean, we had the ideas last year, and you know, given some of the data we had from my starts in Tacoma and Seattle, it's just hard during a season to make any kind of major changes.
Sure.
Like, you don't want to mess with you know, any pitches or anything too big with the delivery. So yeah, we've had a few different things with the slider we've adjusted, and there's some work with tunneling that we're going on, and trying to get more consistent fade and depth out of my changeup. So just small tweaks with you know, just playing with different grips with pressure points and that kind of stuff. It's, you know, nothing too crazy, but you know, I think with this game, especially at the higher levels, you have to always be able to adapt and keep improving even on your strengths. You can't just kind of, you know, leave those and hope that they stay as sharp as they are. So
definitely
trying to improve on changeup and slider have been the main two, but trying to get the curveball to, you know, consistently be an option to, you know, get outs with. And so kind of all those, nothing too major, like I said, but just kind of small adjustments. And then Yeah, definitely looking forward to getting to Arizona in February and then actually getting to work closely with all the pitching minds that we have together and seeing what they have to say about it.
You talked a little bit about how difficult it is to make changes in season. Clearly,
yeah.
I mean, when you're just the pace of baseball is such that it is difficult to get any breathing time away. But also, you had an especially difficult time because you played at three different levels last year. So three different levels, three different sort of pitching environments, Texas League, PAC, Pacific Coast League, and then MLB. You're playing in all these different pitcher parks, like from very friendly pitcher parks in Texas to not very friendly pitcher parks in the PCL. A little have a little.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
that place was unbelievable.
What a nightmare! That's a pitcher nightmare. There were a few balls that just once they go up in the air, you're like, well, goodbye.
Oh yeah.
So a lot of that, but also you had a lot of different coaching at each of these levels, mm-hmm. right? You're working with Ethan Katz at AA and Painter at AAA, and then you've got Stottlemyre. So was that must have been tough. Did you have consistent messaging across the levels, or was that a challenge for you as well? Was like just having to make all of these adjustments to kind of put your best foot forward every day?
Yeah, it's definitely tough. That's something that definitely goes unnoticed a lot of times is just the, like you said, amount of different people that you have, where obviously there's a organization philosophy and whatnot, but every pitching coach is going to have their own style and they're going to have their own opinions on what to do. But across all three levels, there's definitely consistent, and like Lindsay touched on, we have meetings once a month where you have to sit down with your manager and pitching coach and lay out exactly what you're working on and how you're going to do it. So that's been consistent from Everett all the way up to Seattle. We've had some meetings like that. So it's nice making sure everyone's on the same page and mm-hmm. has a process to what you're working on. But yeah, also just between starts, I mean, you don't really have the time or the energy to, you know, put in the work to make any drastic changes, where that's something I kind of struggled with at the beginning last year, where I wasn't happy with how some of my pitches were going. So then my bullpens, I would try and throw some more pitches in there. And before you know it, I'd be throwing 50, 60 pitch bullpens sometimes. And then you're fatigued going into your next start. And I think that kind of had an effect on me later in the season, where, I started to feel the effects of it and just told myself that, you know, on those days where you're not feeling it or you're having a tough bullpen, you have to have the maturity to, you know, hand the ball off and say, you know, I'm good today. I maybe tomorrow I'll pick back up, but you can't just keep throwing and keep throwing. Like I was able to a lot of times in college in bullpens, having 6 days between, you just gotta, be smart and make sure on that fifth day you're ready to go and have your best stuff, not necessarily on your bullpen day. So that was something I kind of struggled with, trying to improve on the slider and curveball at times, but, it's something I got to be better at in the future.
Well, that's a challenge for you personally too, because I don't, I don't think a lot of people would like assume this about you just because you're a little more soft spoken, but you are fiercely competitive, right?
Like,
fiercely competitive. You hate losing.
Yep.
And so if you feel like you're losing a bullpen, I could definitely feel the, understand the impulse to like want to keep throwing until you feel like you have it right.
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to make bullpens as game-like as possible, because if you're going 70-80% in the bullpen, I mean, how is that benefiting you at all? Like, if you're just flipping curveballs in there, you're never going to throw a curveball like that in a game. So you have to get after it. So it's not like it's 50-60 pitches just messing around. I mean, I'm trying to go as close to game speed as I can. So it's almost like throwing 4 or 5 innings and then trying to go do that again plus a few more in 2 or 3 days after that. So that competitiveness is definitely nice, but at times you have to know how to tame it a little bit and call it back. But it's definitely good between the lines.
So speaking of competitiveness, we talked a little bit before, and I know you showed your hand a bit, but when we talked to Art Warren a few weeks back, he mentioned there's a lot of Madden, there's a lot of 2K, and especially with spring training coming up, you guys, I would imagine, have a reasonable amount of downtime. I mean, you're practicing, you're playing games, so you're not doing so much lounging, but you have some time together. So what is your go-to, you know, when you're trying to relax, when you're trying to kick back, you know, where do you redirect that competitive spirit?
There's a lot of competitiveness that goes into it, but yeah, I was never really too much of a gamer growing up, and then I actually bought a PlayStation 2 last year that I would travel with a lot in Arkansas.
Last year?
Yeah.
All right.
We play like on the road, me, Tyler Herb, Joey Wong. Two of the other guys would play like NBA Street or MLB Slugfest. So that's,
oh, man.
So we would have some good battles there. College Baseball 06. We would play a lot of home run derbies on that. But yeah, currently right now playing a ton of Fortnite, a bunch of 2K, and then Star Wars Battlefront 2. Those are the main three. Never got into Call of Duty, but yeah, I'm not 2K, I'm not bad at, but the other two I'm terrible, but it's just a good way
Well, the nice thing about Fortnite is you can, I think with a lot of those games, if you can hide, then you can still make it pretty far.
Yeah, that was the approach early on, just hide in a bush and then wait for people to run by and shoot them in the back. But
it's no
fun doing that. Yeah, but gotta get better at building. That's my low point right now. Gotta improve that.
So Art mentioned that he's very thorough. He's an Ohio guy, and he sticks with his local teams when he's playing. So that I would imagine it burns him when he's playing as the Cleveland Browns a fair amount. But
yeah.
he
won with the Browns.
He did.
I believe it.
But considering that gives him the Cavs, do you stick with the Blazers and with Dame, or where are you?
No, I'm actually a Warriors fan. I was raised by Bay Area parents, so I grew up, a Warriors fan. So I was actually just watching that series when they beat the Mavericks, the We Believe 8-1. They have that on YouTube, so I was just watching that the other day. But yeah, when I play online, I won't play as them. Honestly, the Lakers have been the team I've been playing with, with Kuzma, and it's just based on a tier system. So, like, if you choose the Lakers, whoever you're playing can't choose, like, the Warriors or someone else. It's kind of fun to as some of the lower teams and play with the young guys. But the Lakers are definitely on the up and up, so I enjoy playing with with that squad right now. But if I really want to beat someone, like when I play Art, I'll bring out the Warriors and give them a nice beat down.
Okay, so we should be on the lookout for you in the Big Baller Brand cleats this year.
Oh, no. Not quite. Oh, man.
In addition to being a Warriors fan, you also grew up as a Giants fan, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Lincecum shows up at Driveline this year. Was that like, were you a little starstruck?
Yeah, I actually got to meet him. I was up there last week, and it was my first time meeting him, and he was honestly super nice, and had some good stories, and it was really cool sitting down and just getting to know him away from the field a little bit. He was actually wearing Sonics shorts, so I thought that was pretty
nice,
cool.
Nice.
I might have to buy me a pair of those. But it was me, Straley, Bauer, him, and a few others just sitting around, and just the amount of baseball knowledge and experience there was incredible. So some of the stories they were sharing was awesome.
When you were growing up then, you were probably watching what? You were watching the Bonds teams, right? The Bonds, the Jeff K team. So did you, watching those teams, model yourself after any of the pitchers? I'm thinking Jason Schmidt. I'm trying to think of who else was on those.
Yeah, there was
righty, but
there was a year I wore number 29 for Schmidt. Most of the time I'd pick 25 for Bonds. I never got 55, but yeah, Lincecum was someone I always looked up to.
Sure.
Honestly, Omar Vizquel, back when I was still playing shortstop through high school, he was someone I always just loved watching how smooth he was, and just so dang consistent on defense. It was awesome to watch. Ray Durham was a guy I really enjoyed watching. Oh, I mean, there was so many good Giants back in those days. It was, plus you got Kruk and Kite calling the games. Like, mm-hmm. Oh man, those were a lot of fun.
Did you ever play the MVP baseball games then, where they were also announcing? Oh man.
Yeah, I never had them, but yeah, going to friends' house and playing those, that was always a blast.
Yeah.
This is convenient because we did get a question from Connor Adams, who wants to know if there was a pitcher you modeled your delivery after.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, it's funny looking back. Like, I have pictures of me right on my wall here pitching when I was like 10 or 11 years old when I first started throwing it. I have the same, like, elevated glove, just like Lincecum, and it's not like I intentionally intentionally wanted to do that. But I think, yeah, maybe just from watching him, even when he was at Washington, something I picked up on. And then, once I got to college, Bauer was someone I watched a lot of film on and kind of took on his approach to pitching. So it was pretty cool getting to meet both those guys in the last couple of years. But I would say those two mostly. But, yeah, not one person in particular just, trying to throw exactly like them. It's just I watch them the most, so that's the image I had in my head of what I wanted to do when I was pitching.
We asked Art a little bit about this, kind of speaking about meeting people who have had great success in the game and being in contact with them. This is your second year that you've been invited to big league camp. Uh-huh. Can you talk a little bit about what your first big league spring training was like last year? I know that that was a little bit of a weird spring training just because there were so many guys missing for the WBC. It almost felt like the young guys kind of had control of spring training for a while there. So, like, maybe just also kind of compare and contrast what you're expecting out of spring training this year from your experience last year.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was, I'm kind of a quiet natured person, so there was a ton of questions I had. I wish I would have spoken up and asked Felix or Smiley or Yavani or some of those guys, but yeah, honestly, it was awesome just having, especially the vets we had, so many of them were willing to give out just little bits and pieces here and there about what they've done to get ready or during the season stuff. And it was just a really fun time to get to know people and get close with them. And then obviously once the baseball portion starts, people really get after it, and you're preparing for the long season and trying to get back to the playoffs. So it was kind of cool seeing both sides of guys, where I expect a lot of that same stuff this year, where we're going to do some team bonding to get to know people's personalities away from baseball, but then also the competitiveness kicks in once you get on the field. And I think that ultimately drives everyone and makes everyone better, that competition. So I think it'll be a lot of the same in that aspect.
Is there anyone who will you go in with your questions this year and actually ask them? And is there anyone who's been particularly generous with their time in maybe giving you a little hands up?
Yeah, definitely. The ones that come to mind, C-Sheck was awesome. Mm-hmm. Last spring training, and even when I was first up, just kind of showing me the ropes and whatnot. But Paxton, Vincent, and Zepchinski would be the main three that I can think of right now that in terms of preparation or when I was in the bullpen last year, I'd never been there before, so Vincent showed me how to get there and how to sit out there, all that stuff. So all those fun things. Vincent was cool, but starting Paxton was awesome about showing me how he watches film and what he's looking for in specific hitters and how to approach them, and breaking down his own video that he watches of himself and stuff like that, where he kind of went out of his way to take me and show me that kind of stuff, which was pretty cool. And so we built a solid relationship off that, and have talked a few times over the off season, and sounds like he's doing really well. So I'm excited to get back and work with him again.
Did you ask Nick Vincent how he throws his fastball with like 2,500 spin rate and just makes it impossible to see at 88 miles per hour?
Yeah, the old rise ball. I'm trying to come up with that one too, but yeah, between that and the cutter, I was trying to get as much as I could. But, yeah, that dude's so much fun to watch. He's as competitive and fearless as they come.
It is the most stressful experience as a fan to watch. Every time he comes in and you see the radar gun going and you're just like, this is terrifying. Like, Mike Trout is up and he's just throwing fastballs like upper, like middle. And people are just swinging right through it. So anyway, those types of guys are fun to watch. So I'm glad to hear that they're being helpful with you.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, so last year was a challenge. A lot of, speaking of coming out of the bullpen and that being something you've never done before, you know, add that to the list of things you'd never had to do before. but one of the biggest things that I think that you had to face last year that you hadn't faced before was struggle and failure at times. Because, you know, you had this high school career, best pitcher around, college career, Team USA, you know, success. You go through the minor, you're blazing through, get to the upper minors, and then things happened really fast, and you encountered, I think as anyone would, struggle. So what was that like for somebody who has only known success? I can imagine it must have been so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely something I've ever been through, and honestly, in any athletics where, you know, basketball, football, baseball, anything, it was, I don't want to say it came easy, but I never really had, you know, that long where it's, you know, a month long of just consistently not producing results like you want.
And I feel like people might not know that, might not know that you were like a ferocious basketball player. Like, you don't but I have heard that no one wanted to play, that you're just all elbows. No one wanted to play against you.
Yeah, full speed ahead. But, yeah, no, going back to even middle school and stuff, that's something I'd never really gone through. So, yeah, after a few of those outings, had a few conversations. Straley was someone I reached out to right away. Had a few long, in-depth conversations with Yeski about how to get through it. Obviously, Stottlemyre and some of the guys on the team just kind of getting – you know, different inputs on how to do it. And, you know, obviously no one's going to have one specific answer that's going to help, as I touched on before. So I think one of the things that helped was I kind of scrapped, you know, bullpens. I went or started going super light on. I would usually do two lifts between starts, took that down to one, you know, tried just giving my body a rest. And so I don't know if it was just fatigue or what, but after doing that, just kind of simplifying everything, getting back to just fastball and changeup, my two strengths, going back to those and really just trying to command those as well as I could, just kind of going back to the basics, started seeing, you know, a few innings where you'd see success and then turn that into a quality start, and then the next one build on that a little bit. So it's just, it's not like you can go out there and just have one dominant outing and all of a sudden you're back rolling. Like, it's definitely a process to getting back on track and getting that confidence back in every single pitch. Cause then that's kind of the tough part, is so many outings you'll be grooving or something. Then, you know, maybe you walk a guy and then give up something in the gap and then one pitch and it's a 3-run home run off. All of a sudden that good outing turns into, you know, those 5 or 6 pitches that you're just eating away at you that night. So, it's just getting that confidence back in every single pitch that you're throwing. And, yeah, that was definitely something I think in my long-term career is going to benefit me, just seeing how to get through that and that I can get through it. And yeah, just seeing some of my better outings there at the end in September when physically I wasn't as sharp as I was earlier in the season, but still being able to throw the ball effectively, for the most part was, you know, it was a big boost in confidence for me.
Oh, that start against Texas, I think specifically is the one that I was thinking of.
That was actually at the pen. That was, I think I came in the 3rd or 4th, but yeah, that was, I think it was Miranda start, I want to say,
and
Garten
Miranda
came in.
Started and was just still having some trouble locating, I think.
Yeah, am I thinking of the Astros? Was it a start against Astros then?
Yeah, I started, a couple times versus them, but yeah, that was
always cool. Fun in your first year, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, seeing success from starting and relieving, because, you know, who knows down the line in my career or whenever, if, you know, the bullpen will be something that ends up popping up. But just knowing that, you know, what I do have to do to get ready and stay ready between innings and all that kind of stuff. So it was definitely nice seeing some success there.
Yeah, I think people underestimate. They think that going to the bullpen is like a step down in challenge. And it's not. It's actually, for somebody who only has experience starting, a completely different set of challenges, and maybe even more challenging, because you're far out of your comfort zone.
Exactly. And I have such a tedious routine before starts where I get going like hour and 15 minutes before. And I mean, you don't have that luxury. You can't get, you know, going on that in the third inning, hoping you get in the sixth or seventh. Like, once they call your name, you might have two hitters to get ready. So just learning how to get ready that quick and, you know, stay ready the whole game was definitely a unique experience I hadn't been through. But, you know, I had learned some good stuff, and the guys out there were really helpful about it. So that was very cool.
So looking forward for next season, are you like a big, because we've talked to a few different guys, like Lindsey Coggle said, he is not a long-term goals guy. He is like, everything is about small achievable goals for him. Mm-hmm. So setting a target, reaching it, and then setting a new target. Other guys have things laid out and they have sort of a general idea of what they want to be progressing towards and have that huge goal broken down to a few bigger picture goals. Where do you fall on that spectrum, and what are your goals for next year?
That's a good question. I don't have any major ones. Like, you know, obviously everyone wants to get 30 wins and win the Cy Young or whatever, but I don't know if that's necessarily a, you know, a good goal to have or whatever. I don't know how you break that into small steps, but I think just staying healthy and doing stuff every single day to help your body, you know, make it through the long season, the you know, February through October, and then hopefully into November. But just doing whatever you can to stay healthy, and then just making the most of when the opportunity comes. I think that's what a lot of it is, just staying ready for when your name is called, and being ready then. But no too big of goals for this year.
I think Mariners fan would be happy with the goal of a pitcher staying healthy for an entire season. That sounds great to me.
Absolutely, yeah. It's tough with the amount of travel and you know, different time zones, different beds, all that stuff, and just the unique baseball delivery that we have to go through, just repeating that thousands and thousands of times. Mm-hmm. You know, just the amount of work that you see a lot of pitchers put in away from the field, or just commitment to recovery and diet and stretching and mobility, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's pretty cool, and it's a lot of hard work that goes into it away from just at the field or in the clubhouse or weight room.
Have you seen, because you mentioned diet recovery and sort of all the different ways, and
from
the public discussion that we've heard from the organization, you know, that's obviously been a huge emphasis for them with hiring Dr. Martin. And
has she been through your fridge yet?
Yeah, has she been through your fridge? No, exactly.
I haven't got to talk to her yet. I'm super pumped on all the few questions for her when we meet. But, yeah, that was an incredible hire, and I've heard nothing but good stuff about her, even from people outside the Mariners organization. If spoke very, very highly of her, so that was a great hire by us.
I want to ask a couple questions, if that's
okay. Oh man.
That doesn't sound good. we'll start with a serious one. Our staff writer Isabel Manassian asked, beyond good numbers or team success or, you know, personal achievements, how do you hope to leave your mark on the game?
Ooh.
I know. We're starting with a tough one. Dang. And I mean, it's totally okay to say that you were going to set the example for everyone to stop using disposable paper cups. Like, I'm totally, totally fine with that as an answer.
I saw that tweet. That's hilarious. I still use that every single day.
You know, those Hydro Flask people need to pay you, because I went and bought one And now I am like a total. All these people were tweeting at me after I tweeted it out.
They're
and were
so
like,
great.
Oh my God, you have to get one. Yeah. So, but I am one of those people.
That one's special because I coached JV basketball after my first off season, and that was my. That was like my payment for it, so that's kind of a special hydro flask, I guess. But
That is the most JV basketball.
Exactly.
Congrats! Yeah, thanks for volunteering.
Good time.
Have a hydro flask. No, they're so great though.
Yeah, no, they're. I would definitely recommend them to everyone that's listening. Go pick one up right now. Hydro flask. I assume it's hydroflask.com, but maybe you guys got a new endorsement right there. Who knows? Back to the question. That's tough. Yeah. I mean, just trying to, impact as many careers in a positive way as you can where, everyone has the same goal and everyone wants to get to the big leagues, whether that's, little kids here in the Eugene community that are, just learning baseball, or if it's guys at Oregon State or at North Eugene or, other Mariners organization players, just trying to, talk baseball and pitching as much as I can and help them out, and then hopefully they'll do the same. And I think that's how, how the game gets passed along and how a lot of good knowledge gets passed along where, obviously I don't know all the answers or everything, but, passing along some of the knowledge and experience I have to, other people, whatever level they're at, I think hopefully will benefit them at some point in their career. Cause I have guys who I can point to that directly have impacted me in many aspects of the game, whether it's on or off the field. So I think that's kind of the main thing is just helping out as many people as you can and leaving the game in a better spot than when you got to it, I guess, is the cliche way of putting that. But
it's kind of cool. You see those kids at the game. I mean, there are always a big swath of Oregon State kids who come out to your starts. And, you can just see them looking up to you. So. That's nice, and getting to play for a hometown team is nice.
Absolutely.
All right, some more questions.
Oh boy.
Our fellow site fan sided
to the Reddit AMA. Oh no. What did I get into?
You really, for those of you who are listening who haven't read it yet, you've got to go look up Andrew's Reddit AMA because it was extremely lengthy. Very involved, very Reddity, lots of discussion of hot dogs as sandwiches. I will say, Andrew, that you convinced me. Like, I now believe a hot dog is a sandwich.
That was the thing is we were on the bus and I was pointing to these specific people. I was like, if you look throughout the conversation at first, they're telling me I'm like 100% wrong. And then you can tell 2 hours later when we're, going into two paragraph long comments, they're starting to question whether they believe it or not. So that was starting to make leeway there, I think. So hopefully I opened it up to longer discussions. I mean, that's as a society what we need. So
it's your first success on leaving an impact on the game. There you go.
There you go.
Change your mind.
Exactly.
I feel like the players union should like harness this power that you have for changing minds and make you like a team rep or something, because
there you go.
Very persuasive.
There's got to be something. Yeah, there's got to be something with that down the line.
All right. Well, while we're talking food takes, our fellow site Soto Mojo wants to know if about pineapple on pizza. Do you agree it's an abomination, or were you born without taste buds? Ouch. I like pineapple on pizza.
I love when people ask these questions because you can so clearly tell they put their own. I don't know, that's part of it, but no, I'm all for it. Canadian bacon and pineapple, the Hawaiian, I'm all for it. So I'll
welcome more
people.
But that's the pizza they serve in The Bad Place. Which, by the way, you should start watching The Good Place if you haven't. I know that you like some TV.
God. Yeah, I've seen so many people talking about it. I'll add that to the list. But
what I will say is, if you ever are interacting with Kate in the future, you will have to have watched it because
I reference it a lot.
We interact a lot, and I'm increasingly unable to understand what is being discussed.
Yeah,
gotta keep up with the times.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I know that you were a fan of Good Television because you were a big fan of How I Met Your Mother, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Because I was talking a little bit with Brett from Tacoma about your shared love of that show.
Yeah, that I've been on movies recently. Yeah, I haven't watched, obviously, Stranger Things, got through that. yeah, there hasn't really been too many shows. I've been moving now towards the movie sphere more than the TV shows, so I'm behind on on all my bingeable shows. I guess I got to pick back up there.
Are you at the sort of like Oscars watch level? Like when those get announced, you sort of make sure you've seen all of them?
Yeah, I just got that. Have you heard of the Movie Pass?
The Movie Pass.
Yeah, I got that 3 months ago, I think it was, and it's $10 a month. You can go to a movie a day. So I'm like, hey, if I go see two movies a month, I'm saving money. So I've been going to as many as I can, and so I think I've seen most of the Oscar nominated pictures, but yeah,
what do you think is going to win?
I was a huge fan of Disaster Artist. I've seen that a couple times.
Okay,
now.
Yeah,
the story behind it, and I mean, just all the incredible actors that come together there.
Had you seen The Room before?
No, I'd never heard of it.
Oh, really?
Never heard of it, and then watching all the interviews, I still haven't seen it. I want to go see it in the theater because I guess live people are throwing like spoons and like quotes.
It's like a Rocky Horror Picture Show kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm holding out to go see it live somewhere. But that's really good. Obviously, Three Billboards is getting a lot of momentum right now. And I mean, that was just such a unique movie. I mean, I've never seen anything quite like that. I really enjoyed Lady Bird. Like, that was one of those movies where if I didn't have MoviePass, like, I probably honestly wouldn't have gone and seen it in the theaters, but
for sure,
shoot, might as well. I actually really enjoyed it. That was
that's
quick
awesome
movie. It was a simple idea. Like, it was just really good at what it was. So, those are up there. Shape of Water, that was definitely different than I was expecting. It was really good story and good fairy tale, but it was a bit much for my liking, but... Yeah, I mean,
that's awesome.
I've seen, I think, 20 or 30, and I could take up all day talking about them. But yeah, it's been cool, kind of seeing all the talk behind it and seeing my own opions. But yeah, it's been fun.
Well, I feel like you'll be in good shape then when it comes to like the little getting to know you time in spring training. You'll just be able to give everyone a different movie review every day.
Exactly. Like, yeah, last year that was my job, so hopefully. Hopefully that's what I get assigned again this year. I'll be more.
Wait,
than
your
prepared.
Job was being movie critic?
Yeah, I thought that's why that question came up. Yeah,
no!
Zach. Zach Curtis.
I vaguely remember this actually.
Zach Curtis and I got tasked with. We had to go watch every movie that was up for Best Picture. We had to go to the theaters and watch it, or find a way of seeing it. And then every day we had to give like a rundown of what the movie was, and then the day before the Oscars were given out, we had to go dress up. So we went to Goodwill and bought a bunch of ridiculous stuff, and then we had to insert like a 30-second clip from every movie and talk about the plot and what was good and bad about it. And it was it was pretty fun.
A lot of homework.
It
was more than I thought I was bargaining for, but no, that was a ton of fun, and it kind of, allowed us to show our personality a little bit in front of the whole group. So that was kind of cool. But I think we were right on, because we had to do Best Picture, actor and actress, and I think we got two of the three, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe I have that in my future. Who knows? But that was a good time.
That was smart. That's smart though. You're getting a head start on it in case you're asked to do it this year. You're gonna show up with all of this in your pocket already.
Exactly. Who needs Rotten Tomatoes? Just send me and I'll send you my opinion.
All right. Well, here's a question from a name that seems vaguely familiar. Ian Miller at 8Relin9.
I don't know what his hand. I don't. I'll have to explain that, but boy.
It's Ian Miller backwards.
Oh, my. Is there... Oh, my God.
I know. It took me a while to get it, too. But
wow.
Ian wants to know, purely unbiased, I'm sure, who is the best-looking outfielder in the organization?
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Sounds like Ian right there. I'm still recovering from this name backwards thing. Wow. Just turned my world upside down. Oh man. Just because he asked it and took the time, I'll give him that that honor. But no, he's a stud. He has bright future ahead. He's a heck of a player, hard worker. I mean, he's got a lot of good stuff coming for him. So that's he definitely deserves a shout out on here.
Talk about a good personality. Ian is,
oh yeah.
Ian
oh
is
my
hilarious.
God. Everyone should have the honor of just spending an hour in a room alone with him. And, oh my, you would. That would be. Oh, I wish.
One of my favorite Ian Miller things is last year he was down in Peoria the whole time, like just by himself. So like going to movies by himself, eating by himself, and he had like a whole Snapchat. He would like draw in stick figure friends in his picture and like out to dinner with the crew.
And they progressively got better, though. Like, he's clearly, like...
the art improved.
Artistic. Yeah, exactly. So maybe that was intentional, and he'll go on to be a millionaire artist.
I was going to say, we've got a movie critic, we've got an art... Yeah. Like, this is an artistic crew that you guys are building right now.
Shaping the future of our country here. That's what off-seasons are for, right? That's what off-seasons are for.
Exactly.
Well, we've talked a lot with guys on the podcast about, and I think this wasn't on ours, but you know Lance Thonvold. Thonvold has a podcast too, and he had Rob Whelan on recently, and they were discussing the importance of having an identity outside of baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, it seems frivolous, right? These like getting to know you things, but how important do you think that is in establishing an identity outside of baseball, or knowing who these guys are outside of the lines, as it were?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, especially how long the season is. If you're, you know, living it like your whole life is just based on results that you're putting out, I mean, you'll just wear yourself out and the game won't even be fun anymore. But, you know, you have to have stuff that you can connect with guys or people away from the field that you can, you know, turn to. And, I was lucky last year. I lived with a family of close family friends who I've known for a while. So it was nice having people outside of baseball when I got home from the stadium or before I left that I could talk to and, you know, go out and eat with and, you know, talk about other things in life. But, you know, obviously baseball is what we're committed to right now. But I mean, so many people are so much more than just baseball players. And, you know, I think a lot of people forget that sometimes that there's so much more to all of us. And I mean, this is obviously our job, like I said, but, you know, it's cool getting to see people away from the field and get to know them and create those friendships that, you know, maybe you never thought would have came to be. And, yeah, Lance has always been one of those dudes. He's, you know, been through a really tough couple years with injuries and setbacks and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in talking with him, you know, texting and whatnot, he's always had a really good outlook and he's got a lot of good stuff away from baseball going on right now, so I know he's in a good spot. But I think he's someone that a lot of kids can look up to and, you know, get a lot of good stuff from. You know, just his commitment to being a good person and always, you know, always giving his best no matter what. I mean, it's incredible. So he's someone I'm really pulling for to, you know, come out and get the best of those injuries.
Absolutely.
You mentioned we don't need to push you too hard on it, but I'm curious about like where, especially last year where it was just such a bizarre season, so many injuries, so many people bouncing back up and, you know, up and down and to the DL and all those different. So were you living in the same place when you were down in Tacoma versus when you were up in Seattle? And, you know, like, how do you manage that? Especially, like, on minor league salary and then
driving,
on a major league salary.
You were driving from Puyallup every day, right? I feel like that's something people need to understand. If you if you know what traffic on I-5 looks like.
I was living in Puyallup the whole season. There in September, I took – obviously, when you go up, you get your 7-7, so you get 7 free nights in the hotel, which I would always take. But, yeah, I mean, for a good chunk of that second half of September when I was up and all of Tacoma, I was living in Puyallup. So I've always been a huge podcast fan, so I have 20 or 30 that I'm always listening to, so that, that made the drive a little more bearable. But, yeah, I mean, it was just nice having that familiarity and you know, get away from the field and, you know, on off days is a really nice community to go out and hang out at. So, yeah, the drive wasn't ideal, but I think all in all, it was definitely worth it.
What is your sort of top three podcasts that you have queued up for?
Especially if any of them are non-baseball.
Oh yeah, they're I try and stay away from baseball podcasts, honestly.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. Highly recommend that.
No one should listen.
Effectively Wild, I'll listen to that a decent amount.
That's the fun.
Those dudes are awesome, and some of the mailbag questions they get are incredible. Anything by The Ringer, I listen to all their stuff. Bill Simmons's network that he produced, I listen to a ton of those. Let's see what else. Road Trippin', Channing Frye leads it with the Cavs. They have LeBron on there, Kevin Love or Isaiah Thomas. And then there's Road Trippin' NBA. So the Hawks guys, Kent Bazemore and Mike Muscala, they have one where they'll have their guests. And it's cool hearing their take on what's going on throughout the season and how they go about it. JJ Redick has a really good podcast. He's really gifted. He had Embiid on there, and that was hilarious. he had Thierry Henry on there. That was pretty cool. The Woj Pod, Low Post are on there. Some non-sports ones, This American Life and Hidden Brain. They just kind of have these super interesting, ideas and do some investigation and tell really good stories. TED Talks, there's a bunch of those I'll download. So
yeah, it's a good balance.
I'm surprised you don't listen to How Did This Get Made or any movie. You don't listen to any movie podcasts?
They'll talk a decent amount on the Bill Simmons ones about movies, and he'll have
that's true.
Producers and directors on there. But I don't really listen to a whole bunch of – and there's a Ringer show just for those.
Right, that's right.
There's one called The Rewatchables where they'll take a movie that's just like the best movies that you can just watch over and over and over and just kind of they'll go all in on it and digest it. They did. Yesterday I was driving back from Bend, so I listened to one about Titanic and one about Moneyball. And those were awesome. It was so cool. Talking about Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill and the chemistry they had and how it worked and some stuff that didn't work. I mean, it's pretty cool. So just gives you a whole new appreciation and for how much goes into it.
Well, we're glad to hear that you're making the most of the time in the car. Because that can be a very lengthy trip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That hour both ways can give for a lot of optimal podcast time.
So who are you podcast? I think you have a podcast buddy with you right now. Who are you podcasting with?
Who am I podcasting with?
Mm-hmm.
A four-legged buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, I got Whoopi. She's in the other room passed out right now, but yeah, it's like 60 degrees right now. So we're about to go on a good walk and, she's the best podcast buddy, I guess you could say.
She is a somewhat challenging dog, though.
She's we've had her for 4 years now. She's about 7 years old, but she had a pretty rough 3 years before that. She's a boxer pit bull mix, so I mean, if she wants to go somewhere, then she's going there, whether you have barriers or you're on a walk. I mean, she's gonna get there. But she's had some pretty bad separation anxiety, and it's been tough on her house, but she's definitely worth it, and I know she's been there through all the tough times that we've had, and her and my mom have a special relationship, so that's been cool to see. But she's a sweetie, though. She just has a tough time being alone.
like so many of us.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Life. Just a couple more questions.
Yeah, no problem.
Who would you like to have dinner from this list of famous Andrews? You can choose Andrew Jackson, Andrew Garfield, Andrew Wiggins, artist Andrew Wyeth, the Broadway superstar Andrew Lloyd Webber, controversial comic Andrew Dice Clay, and I suppose I will give you Andy Reddick and Andy Samberg because I know you like them. You can choose more than one, but like if you were assembling an Andrews council, who would you want sitting on that council with you?
This is for people that haven't read it. This is also based from the Reddit AMA.
Yes, yes.
And yes, Samberg was definitely my choice there, but that's so tough. That's tough. Andrew Wiggins would definitely be up there just hearing what life in the NBA is like and You know, he's had an interesting career so far, and definitely on the up and up, but he seems like a really good dude, so he'd be up there. Andrew Jackson, that'd be an interesting one, hearing what life was like. When was he...
When was he president?
Yeah.
I believe it was, like, what, the...
Early 1800s,
early
right?
Early 1800s, yeah. Yeah. He was the one who didn't like paper money, right? And we put him on the $20 bill.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
He probably that has some rage issues to explore around that.
Like, I don't know how much we'd have in common, but, hey, that'd be a fun meal. I'd get to show him Chipotle or something. I don't know if he'd like it, but show him what that's all about. Or In-N-Out or... Chick-fil-A, one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, man, so many good Andrews. But, yeah, Sandberg would definitely be the best. He's so talented. Oh, man, I've loved his work on SNL and then Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is so funny.
That show is awesome. Oh, my God, I need to watch that more.
No, you need to what you need to watch is The Good Place. Because
you guys keep pressing me on this. All right, I'll give it.
All right. One more thing. You are Greek, right? You have a little ritual that you do before the beginning, before each of your starts.
Yep. Uh-huh.
What is it that you put into the back of the mound? You carve into the back of the mound of something?
Yeah, it goes back to my senior year of high school. My grandfather passed away, and he was, like I talked about before, kind of where the love for baseball stems from, where he played professionally, and then my mom grew up around the game, so she loved it, but he was someone who, you know, after every single game, he'd be the first person I'd call and talk about, you know, what I did or whatnot, and I mean, he had an incredible personality, always joking around, and someone I really looked up to, and then, you know, he got sick and passed away, and it was really tough on me, and I just wanted something where I could take a brief moment and kind of, you know, just remember him before I go out there, because he's a huge reason why baseball was a part of my life. So I carve out, it's Time in Greek. It means honor. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a quick little reminder of the impact he's had on my life. And, you know, definitely someone I wish, you know, could have seen me pitch at Oregon State or in pro ball or in a major league stadium. But, you know, I know he's watching and at every start, but yeah, it's something I've done since high school and it's carried along and still, is as impactful every time I do it as the first time I thought to do it back then. So it's a pretty special tradition that I hold dear to my heart.
Well, I'm going to completely be very silly now after you've been very serious.
That's fine.
And I'm going to give you a little quick Greek quiz. We're going to test your Greekness. All right.
Oh man.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Man. Which one of these is the Greek goddess of wisdom? Is it Athena, Aphrodite, or Artemis?
Artemis, I think.
Nope.
What?
No.
Which one is it?
It's not Athena. Aphrodite. It's Athena.
It's Athena. Okay. It's Athena.
I knew it wasn't Aphrodite, so it was just a flip of the coin, and dang it. Oh, well.
All right, next one. Which of these is the ancient Greek poet who is responsible for the Iliad and the Odyssey? Is it Homer, Aristotle, or Aeschylus?
Homer.
Yes, good job.
That was the name of my grandfather, actually, so that's why I knew that one. Yeah. Homer Curtis.
What two countries does Greece border? Spain and Italy? Spain and France? Or Turkey and Italy?
Before I answer this, I want people to remember that I'm just a college dropout. I left after 3 years at Oregon State, so don't judge me. I'm just trying to buy time so I can Google it. No, I'm just kidding. Can you read through the answers again?
It's Spain and Italy.
Spain and Italy.
Uh-huh. Or Spain and France.
Uh-huh.
Or Turkey and Italy.
Turkey and Italy.
That is correct.
Let's go. Oh, my goodness. I know Italy's the one that looks like the boot, so I knew that one. When Turkey, yeah, okay. I won't even go through my thought process. But...
All right, this one is a challenge.
Oh, they all, what? All of these
guys. Name the ingredients in a Greek salad.
Oh man, feta cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what? And a Greek salad? Lettuce? I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
What else? What do Greeks?
Andrew, what do Greeks eat?
There'll be onion in there.
Yes, good. Yep. Good, red onion.
Bell pepper?
Yep. Or red peppers, yes.
Red pepper, close enough. I need to know this. How many more is there?
Three more.
Oh, three more? Yeah. What kind of... Well, you're eating some fancy Greek salads.
the last three are all vegetables or vegetable adjacent, so... I feel like these are
I feel like these are
gettable. Vegetables? I'm telling Dr. Martin. I mean, one of them is something you and I just talked about, just as a controversial food.
Oh, the olives, yeah.
Olives, yes.
Yeah, obviously. It's Greek salad. I don't even know the last two.
Okay, it's tomatoes and cucumber, but...
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I'm not a tomato person, but I try not have those in my life.
we'll give you partial credit on that one.
Okay.
Okay, and the final one.
Oh.
Okay, it's fine. Which of these three actresses is of Greek descent? Okay, and your choices are Amy Adams, Gwyneth Paltrow, or Tina Fey.
I was hoping the name would be a dead giveaway.
What if I told you her name was really Elizabeth Stamatina Fey?
Oh, I would have to go with Tina Fey then.
Oh, good job, good job. All right.
That's what I was going to guess anyway, so.
Yep, she was.
You guys can cut that part out, right? You can just edit the hint.
Yeah, we'll edit around. Yeah. So it sounds like. Yeah. I don't know.
We'll just put the Jeopardy music really loud over for a moment.
Exactly, and then you guys can edit in that I got the other ones right and make it look good. Yeah. I keep up with my Greek, but.
I don't know. I have a feeling your mom is going to give you a hard time about.
Oh yeah,
about
I need
this.
To know those.
But maybe you can finagle a trip to the homeland out of it. I mean, clearly it's obvious you need a trip back to the homeland to connect with your heritage, right?
Exactly.
Your
I was
Greek
working on getting
salad
my citizenship
Tina
there for a little bit, but that kind of fell through. Because I was going to try to play for the national team, but...
Yes!
Exactly.
But, yeah, that's probably not in the works for a while, but... Oh, well.
Late career thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You can be like Freddie Garcia down there in the Venezuelan League, still chucking the pill at 41.
Exactly. That'll be. There's my long term goal. It always always comes full circle. There we go.
Pitch for the Greek national team at age 41. Holding you to
Perfect.
That.
I'll take it.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us, Andrew.
Yeah, of course.
That was highly entertaining. Where can people find you if they want to follow you and see other great insights about the Golden State Warriors and Greek culture, which I assume that you'll now immerse yourself into, and your movie reviews, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I wish I shared more. I don't go on Twitter as much anymore, but and Instagram.
Yeah,
although,
you're not missing too much.
Yeah. Reddit's taken over my life recently. That's the place to be, but you can't really interact too much on there. But
people can like poke around and try to find you in the Shape of Water subreddits.
What
is this movie about?
Oh yeah, I'm frequenting all those subreddits. But Twitter and Instagram would be the main two. Like I said, I don't go on them too much, but I'm always checking to see if people are trying to interact or anything. But mostly those two.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for joining us, Andrew. And we look forward to seeing what's coming for you this year. Big things. And looking forward to spring training. I mean, it's just like not even two weeks here now.
Oh, yeah.
Like 9 days, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, coming up real quick. But, yeah, thank you, Kate and John, for having me. That was a blast. And, hopefully people had fun listening. But, would love to do it again.
Absolutely. And shout out to Jordan of the Cespedes BBQ, who I meant to flame in one of our questions because you just you burned the BBQ down on your Reddit AMA when they tried to get you to give them a little shout out, and you're like, never.
That was a bad idea because they have some. I think they have some stuff they could blackmail me with. So some videos back in the day from Oregon State when we were doing our backup video. But no, those are awesome dudes. They're the best.
Oh, we'll have to have Jordan back on the pod. Maybe we can charm 100%. Some of that out of him.
Definitely,
have you both.
Definitely.
That could be fun.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And, man, spring training right around the corner. We will talk to you soon.
Once upon a time, not long ago, when people wore pajamas and lived life slow, where laws were stern and justice stood, and people were behaving like they ought to good, there lived a little boy who was misled by another little boy, and this is what he said. Me and you tonight, we're gonna make some cash, robbing old folks and making the dash. They did the job, money came with ease, but one couldn't stop.